My name is Dr. Annette Rubery, and my guest today is Dr. Chris Olivola, a Newton International Fellow in the Behavioural Science Group at Warwick Business School. With Danny Oppenheimer, he edited a book called The Science of Giving, which brings together insights from researchers on the factors that promote or hinder charitable giving. I talked to him about his research into a very modern phenomenon, the charity fundraiser that involves pain and effort, such as running a marathon or walking barefoot on hot coals. Why, when we are programmed to avoid pain, are these events so motivating for the fundraiser and so successful at drawing pledges? Following a series of experiments, Dr. Olivola has coined the term the martyrdom effect to explain this psychological state.
So the martyrdom effect is something we found, or the finding that when people have to exert effort or endure pain, or when their friends are going to exert effort or endure pain in order to raise money for a cause, like a charitable cause, then people contribute more. So when they're basically, the martyrdom effect is when one's contributions are associated with some kind of effort, pain, suffering, challenge, people contribute more in that case.
So could you tell us a little bit about the experiments that you undertook?
So the idea behind this research was inspired by sort of the what I found was a puzzle, which is that people do these painful, effortful, charitable events to raise money. And this set me on, right, research agenda. So we did a couple different things. One of the things we did was ask people to consider various scenarios. For example, imagining they could raise money by running like a marathon, or they could raise money for the same cause by participating in a picnic, and asking people how much they would contribute in both cases, or asking them how much they would contribute if they had a friend who was going to run a long distance or do something painful, versus if their friend simply asked them but showed that she cared. And what we find in these studies is that people report that they would contribute a lot more when either they or a friend or someone is going to have to, again, exert effort or endure pain to raise money for the very same cause. We also did an experiment where we wanted to sort of abstract away from the specific context of these charities and marathons. And we also wanted to kind of see if this would happen with sort of a real decision, with real pain and real money at stake. So we had people play a game where we gave each person a sum of money, and they kind of played this game in groups. And what they did is independently, sort of on their own, anonymously, they had to decide how to divide the money between themselves and the group. Now, any money they decided to keep, they just kept it, and that's what they got at the end of the session. Any money they decided to give to the group would get doubled and redistributed evenly. So in this kind of game, typically called the public goods game, the individual has a sort of selfish incentive to keep all the money and hope that everyone else contributes, because that's the way to make the most possible money, to sort of free ride on people's contributions. And in this typical version of the game, what we found, like what most people have found who study this game, is that people gave about, we gave them, this was done some years ago, we gave them $5, US dollars to split, and they gave about $3 out of $5 to the contribution in the standard version. And then we had another version where we told them, if you decide to keep all the money, then that's it, you're done, you keep all the money, as in the standard version. But if you want to contribute any amount to the public goods, to the sort of collective, then in order for the amount to double, you have to put, we told people they'd have to, and they knew this when they made their decision, they'd have to put both their hands in very cold water for 60 seconds. So it's a painful task. It's not damaging, but it's, I had to do this myself and try to design the task. It's quite painful. And there we found, surprisingly, that people were giving more money. They were giving $4 out of $5 to the collective. And this is kind of funny, because we essentially gave people an incentive, a good reason, not to contribute by making it more painful. And yet here they are giving more when we make the process of contributing challenging. So these are the kind of experiments we've sort of done, a mix of these sort of lab studies and giving people these vignettes or scenarios to kind of get at their intuitions. And it seems to fit the real-world data, that we also have some real-world data showing that, for a given charity event, like a bike-a-thon or a marathon, the longer the distance that people have to run or bike, the more they contribute, or the more their friends will contribute to sponsor their fundraising efforts.
Mm. And did you find any correlation between the sort of charities that people were willing to donate to and kind of the pain level that they were willing to endure?
So what's interesting, we actually found two really interesting results related to that question. The first one is there's actually when people... So we did an experiment where we sort of asked different groups of people to consider different distances that they could run or that their friend could run, and how much they would, we asked them, how much would you contribute, each person, considering a different distance. And so, some people would be told to imagine running a mile, or to imagine that their friend was going to run a mile to raise money for charities. Others would be told 2 miles, others would be told 3 miles, all the way up to 20 miles. So each person had sort of was considering one distance, one type of distance. And there we found no relationship whatsoever between distance and the amount that people were willing to contribute. So it's as if just the presence or absence of pain matters, not sort of the amount of pain. Now, of course, I said just previously that in events where people have to ride or bike longer, they donate more. But in those events, they can directly see, they have, when you're deciding how to sponsor your friend, you know that your friend is going to has decided to bike, let's say, 100 kilometers when they could have chosen to bike 50. So they can sort of directly compare that. Now, the other interesting result we find is this martyrdom effect, this tendency for people to contribute more when the contribution process is painful and effortful, seems to happen mainly for causes, for charities involving human suffering, right? So, for example, we did one study where we asked people to imagine, ask them how much they would contribute, either to, let's say, participate in a picnic, or to, in another version, another group of participants, how much they would contribute to participate in a fast, right, where they have to give up food for, I think it was 30 hours. And the charity was either something involving fighting hunger in malnourished children, or I think the other version was something, I think, raising money for, like, a public park. Mm-hmm. And what we find is that people contribute much more when they have to fast compared to the picnic, when it's starving children is the cause. But when the cause is raising money for, like, a public park, then we get no difference. It sort of reverses, although it's basically... So what's interesting is the martyrdom effect, it seems to be that there has to be sort of a match, a sort of congruence, that people will give more if there's suffering involved, if the cause that they're raising money for involves human suffering. But if it's something like, people basically, they're not going to run 50 miles or walk on broken glass to raise money for a political party or a museum or something.
Yeah, very interesting. And so is there a danger, do you think, that these techniques of raising money, these painful techniques, are becoming very commonplace now, and that perhaps they might lose some of their power?
So my research in itself doesn't speak to that directly, but I think there is a lot of evidence that is kind of what's happening. I think that there's been... there is evidence that in the case, the specific case of marathons for charity, right? So where people run long distances, I think that there is sort of a saturation, if you want to think of it this way, so that it's sort of no longer as novel and sort of to run, let's say, 20 miles or so on to raise money for charity as it was when these things started off. So I think you see that. On the other hand, what you see as a sort of response to that is I think you see people developing more and more sort of eccentric, painful, novel ways of enduring, inflicting pain to raise money. So you see events where people... walk barefoot on hot coals, or jumping to a freezing lake, with nothing but their bathing suit to raise money. So you're seeing people get kind of very creative in how they sort of inflict pain or endure pain to raise money for cause in response to this sort of, yeah.
And how do you see the wider implications of your research? I don't know if charities are adopting this research in any way, whether you know that or, What would be beyond the charity sector? How do you see this research being useful?
Just in response to the first question, I definitely think charities have understood this intuition, or at least sort of accidentally came across it. I mean, exactly. This research was actually inspired by this observation, right? That we can all see that people you know, these fundraising events that are quite painful and effortful are quite popular. And that was the essential question that got me. So that was the case. How are charities using this? That's a good question. I mean, I think that, as we just mentioned, as the novelty of some of these events, like basic in the sense of the standard marathons or bikeathons, are sort of wearing off, some charities are getting creative and doing other things, like I mentioned, people diving in freezing cold water and so on. That's one way. Beyond that, I think that they could actually be using these in much more efficient and beneficial ways. I think that, I mean, so one of the findings I mentioned before is that the amount of pain doesn't seem to matter. So I think what charities need to understand is the goal isn't to make it as difficult as possible, just challenging enough so people perceive it as something, sort of an obstacle to overcome. So our research suggests that as long as people perceive it as a challenge, they and their friends will contribute more. How challenging it is beyond that may or may not matter. The other thing that is, I think, would be a beneficial way for charities to use this intuition is that I think what I'd like to see, so one issue I have with these events, I mean, they gather a lot of money, but they're actually quite costly to organize. Mm-hmm. They're costly to execute. They're costly to run. And the people involved in the events, all the time that they're spending, let's say, training for a marathon or buying the equipment or so on, that's money they could be contributing to the cause. Mm-hmm. So there's a very large opportunity cost to these events, right? All the time and energy and money going into these is time, energy, and money that's, of course, not being contributed to the cause. And this is an issue because, of course, running a marathon isn't in itself going to cure cancer or deal with, you know, hunger and so on. What I'd like to see, maybe this is a bit crazy or eccentric, is you could imagine events that where the actual event is challenging, but it actually contributes to a charity. So, you know, imagine instead of people just running, you could have people planting trees, you know, racing to plant trees or build homes to raise money for another cause, like cancer and so on. So that you get sort of two birds with one stone.
Yeah.
That's one thing I'd like to see. In terms of broader implications, I think what this research highlights or sort of helps understand, I think, is this really interesting, what I see is maybe perhaps a fundamental human tendency, and maybe it extends beyond humans, who knows, to sort of value at some level, to give sort of meaning and value to self-sacrifice. I think that's the key theme here. And so there is a way at this stage, it's very sort of kind of ambiguous, but I think there is perhaps a way in which this research connects to other forms of self-sacrifice. For example, we saw this, a lot of really wonderful performances during the Olympics and all the volunteers and so on. And of course, these people are getting a lot of deserved recognition. But then also maybe nastier examples of sacrifice, like, of course, suicide, terrorism, and so on. So if we can really understand this human tendency, then there might be a lot of really interesting and important implications.
Mm. And I just wanted to finish off by asking you about the work that you're currently doing on decision by sampling. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So this is a very different project, but it's one that's at least as exciting, I think. So this is actually work. This is a theory that was developed by three brilliant colleagues here at the University of Warwick. Two in psychology, so Professor Gordon Brown, Professor Neil Stewart, and in behavioral science, Professor Nick Chater. So some years ago, they developed what I see as a really radical, unique, and really interesting, and I think important theory of decision-making. And to sort of put this theory sort of in context, up to now, most of our understanding of decision-making, most of our theories were sort of built on these basic economic theories that sort of assume that we have these kind of value functions, lookup tables that translate objective values like amounts of money, time, chocolate, what have you, into a subjective value, right? So 100 pounds seems how good to you, 200 pounds seems how good. So there have been a lot of these descriptive theories that sort of describe how we assign values to things, but without really explaining them. And so it was sort of these kind of, I would say, as-if theories. What these guys have done when they developed decision by sampling is provide what I see as one of the first really plausible, interesting theories that might be able to explain how we perceive things, how we ascribe value to things like money, time, and so on. And so this actually, it's by reading this theory, I got really interested in this work, and this is actually what led me to England and why I'm working with these guys now. And some of the work I've been doing actually kind of, I suppose, ties back to charitable giving. And the first project I was involved in, we wrote a paper, this was actually before I came here, looking at how people value or how they react, let's say, to the, you know, when you hear on the news that 100 people, for example, have died in, you know, a plane crash or so on. How shocking is that to you? How do we ascribe value, of course, in a negative sense, to the loss of human life, right? So, you know, 100 people is shocking. 200 is certainly more shocking, but is it twice as shocking? Mm. Probably not, right? I don't think we have this diminishing sensitivity. Why does that happen so on? So I've actually used this theory to explain this. And it's a really powerful tool. So this is something, yeah, this is a really powerful, really interesting theory that I'm currently working on, that we're currently working on, trying to develop. And I think it's got a lot of potential, and it could, you know, I say this shamelessly because I didn't come up with this theory, but I think it could really radically alter how we think about decision-making, how we model it, how we theorize it, and how we come to understand human preferences and decision-making really in the broad sense.
Well, thanks so much, Chris. I look forward to hearing more about that project, and thank you for your time. And do visit the Knowledge Centre again soon for more insights and expertise from Warwick's research community.